Today, we have with us Representative Gruenberg, Representative Bob Lynn, Representative Foster, and myself, Representative Keller. And we had a long, little delayed in the floor session there, but we'll get right after it. HB 73 was on the schedule today under bills previously heard. Frankly, we're not going to get there. I'm told my staff tells me that there is some desire to get HB 73 moved this Friday over on the Senate side, and so the decision has to be made. Representative Gruber suggested, and we've been contemplating just how much attention to pay to that.
What bill is that?
HB 73, sex crimes.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're still kind of on hold on that one for now.
I will work on that.
So this is a week to pay attention to, you know, both the changes we want to make and the changes they get
Absolutely.
Out of there. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to start with the bill that, by my estimation, should take the least time. Now, that is dangerous. That is a really dangerous statement. I'm still going to do that. We'll start with Representative Hocker and HB 63. Then we'll go to House Bill 34, and I will put my bill again at the tail, and I got to... It's a sneaking suspicion, even though it's under bills previously heard, and we're not going to get to it today, but that's all right. So, if you would, Representative Hocker, introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. For record-keeping purposes, I am Representative Mike Hocker, representing District 27. I'm here today to present House Bill number 63, which is one of our ministerial measures that we do on a recurring basis here in the legislature. This is an act extending the termination date of the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association. A legislative auditor has concluded its recurring audit of the Bar Association, has determined that the Bar Association is operating in the public interest, is been obviously compliant in all respects with its duties and responsibilities to the public, and the legislative auditor has recommended the extension date be extended to June 30, 2021, which is represented in the bill before you. There was only one management issue noted in the legislator's state auditor's report, Mr. Chairman, and that's a recurring issue that always keeps coming up, and it suggests that the Supreme Court Supreme Court petitioned them to increase their continuing legal education requirements. Respectfully, that issue in question, I don't think really is germane to the extension of the Bar Association, more on the order of guidance from the ledge auditor, I think maybe as accountants who have much greater continuing education requirements are a tad bit jealous of the lawyers getting off so easy. But Mr. Chairman, that's the bill in a nutshell, sir.
Okay. Any questions for the sponsor? Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Chair. I put my name on the bill also. I'm a member of the bar, as you folks know. And I strongly feel that there should be more mandatory CLE. The only thing that's really mandatory is 3 hours of ethics every year, and there's aspirational for 9 more hours of general CLE. But the law is fast becoming more complex, and it's like every other field of human endeavor and scholarship. You've got to keep up with it, or you seriously are going to endanger your clients and the practice of law. I would have no problem in putting something somewhere in here that says that we support the ledger audits, the legislative auditor's recommendation that the mandatory CLE be increased. And I'm just wondering, and I'm through the chair to Representative Hocker, how you would feel if we had maybe a purposes section that said to that effect that we think it should be increased, and put in maybe a section or something that directs the bar or the Supreme Court to provide us with, say, an annual report or biannual, you know, every other year on how they're coming on this. Because this is an issue that's been around for quite a while, and when I started out in practice in the 1970s, my partner Tony Smith was one of the leaders in trying to get mandatory CLE back then, and through the chair to Representative Hawker. How would you feel if we did something to show that we are concerned about this?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, if it is the will of the committee, that type of thing, I believe, would be best accomplished through attaching a letter of intent to the legislation. We've got a long history in this building of keeping these reauthorizations bills clean and devoid of policy calls and considerations. Again, I'd very much rather see the actual text of the legislation remain simply that, a statutory change. But if you wish to promote that thought, again, the appropriate methodology, should it be the committee's will, is an attached letter of intent.
Through the chair, may I?
Yeah, before you reply, Representative Ledoux has joined us. Thanks.
So what I'd like to do with that is I'm not going to hold the bill up or anything, because we can do a letter of intent the next day. You know, we don't have to do it with the bill. But you would not be opposed, through the chair, Representative Hawker, you would not be opposed to seeing a letter of intent to that effect.
Mr. Chairman, I think that statement is already made through the legislative auditor's report, but if this committee feels it needs to endorse that recommendation even more strongly, that would be the will of the committee.
I would ask what the chair is feeling. I'll draft such a short letter of intent if the committee is agreeable to the concept.
I'm open to consideration of that. Any other questions for Representative Hawker?
I'm sorry, did he?
I'll take that under consideration, and I'll look for your draft.
I'll try to get it to you the next time we meet.
Yeah, thank you. I don't see any other questions, so thank you, Representative Hawker. Yeah, we have in the room a set of you to answer questions if we want them. Hannah Sebold, president of, I probably said that wrong, but president of the Alaska Bar Association, and Steve Van Gore, the bar counsel. And then we have three here from legislative audit and then one caller online. So let's go ahead and call Chris up from Ledge Audit. And he marked yes, definitely. Or she? I'm sorry, Chris. if you would.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. And Representative Hawker really summarized the essence of the audit. So I'm available for questions if there are any, but I'll hold my comments unless there's questions.
Okay. No questions for our auditor.
Do we have Ms. Sebold? I see we have Mr. Van Gore here.
Yes.
I wanted to ask one of them a question.
Which one?
Are you both there? Hi.
Thank you, Chris, for your time, and we'll call you back up for those questions. Hannah and Steve, if you both would come up, that'd be great, and then we'll let Representative Grunberg ask questions.
Good afternoon. I'm Hannah Sebold.
Thank you. Speak into the mic, because that's the way it gets on the record. So,
for the record, I'm Hannah Sebold. I'm the president of the Board of Governors for the Alaska Bar Association.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Good to see you both. And first, Colorado's loss was our gain.
Absolutely.
And I'm so glad that you're... Steve Van Gore is bar counsel, and he's been it forever. And Ms. Sebold's the president of the bar, and you're both doing a great job.
Thank you.
Two things. You heard my dialogue a minute ago about a letter of intent that, at least speaking personally, I'd really like to see us get some mandatory CLE here. And if we were to add a letter of intent like that, having the Ledge audits recommendations here, what would the bar's response be about doing some more CLE? I know it's a Supreme Court's choice, but what about the Bar Association?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I think you did hit the nail on the head that it really is the Supreme Court's decision. We are more than happy to engage in discussions with them and provide that information. Mr. Van Gore can also elaborate on that if you'd like.
Sure, if that's okay with you. Mm-hmm.
Representative Grunberg, same question. Go ahead and identify yourself for the
record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Van Goren, Bar Counsel for the Alaska Bar Association. Representative Grunberg, thank you very much for those kind comments. As we reported to the legislative auditor, we have worked collaboratively with the Supreme Court, resulting in a voluntary rule in 1999 and then a mandatory CLE rule that was adopted by the court in 2008. As we reported to the legislative auditor, the court should be holding an administrative rules conference to consider changes to the CLE rule to make it easier for members of the bar to determine what they need to do to comply with the rule. And it is at that administrative rules conference that we will have the opportunity to engage in a dialogue with the court about the legislature's concerns, and certainly the concerns expressed by the auditor in our most recent report.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Representative Grunberg?
Thank you very much. Yeah. I think that the public feels it's important, and I think a lot of lawyers do. I don't know most, but I certainly do. The other thing that I'd like to bring up, I just got a letter today from Tom Obermeyer talking about the pass rate on the bar exams. I don't know if other legislators got you did too.
Today, yep.
Okay, I think we all probably did. Did the Bar Association get a copy of that letter?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, Cecile in Representative Hawker's office showed me the letter in her briefing book. I have not had a chance to look at it line by line, but I checked with our executive director, who, by the way, sends her regrets for not being able to be here. She's doing the bar exam the next 2 days.
Oh, okay.
We have not received a copy of that letter.
But
Representative Grunberg, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you.
Now, before we go any further, Representative Pruitt has joined us. Thanks.
if you'd like a copy, we have one in the office, or I'm happy to give you one. But what I'd like to do is to, if you could make available a copy of your response to him. I mean, this is something that really is to you folks. And if you could get this committee a copy of that response, what Mr. Obermeyer said was
Representative Grunberg, before you go there, you don't have to represent him. He's online waiting to testify here later.
Oh, sorry.
So let's let that go for now. And
of course.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you. Yeah. Tori Jacobson, and do you have anything to add, or were you here for questions from the ledge auditor, or just to be available? You know, there's a column that we have here. You want to testify or not? And if you write yes, I call on you. If you don't do anything, I got to ask you. So, Karen, I assume the same thing, that you're here to answer questions. Okay, great. So, with that, then we'll go to Tom Obermeyer. Are you online, Tom?
Okay, you hear me?
Weekly, but try again, maybe. And go ahead and state your name if you would, and identify yourself for the record.
For the record, I'm Tom Obermeyer. Representing myself. I think they're adjusting the dials here. Can you hear me a little better now?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. You've received my letter, and for the benefit of Mr. Van Gore, I understand it has been posted online as one of your documents for your House Bill 63. I don't consider House Bill 63 a ministerial bill like approving the Board of Accountancy or Nurses Association or even the State Medical Board. There have been many problems with the Alaska Bar Association, including lack of uniform discipline and admissions problems over the years, and I find that, to my amazement, it is even tacitly approved by the National Conference of Bar Examiners that states can control their own passage rates. You have some of the most highly qualified applicants in the United States in Alaska who have all graduated from American Bar Association accredited law schools, and yet one-third are denied a license every 6 months. And unlike accountancy and engineer's exams, you can't can't just retake portions that you fail. You go through this entire process. It's arduous, it's expensive, and it devastates families who have put their treasure and time and effort into this process for many years. And when I point out that Wisconsin passes 100% of its people who graduate from its own state law schools and give a law license in one hand and a degree in the other, you recognize that some states feel that people are owed a right to practice. And if you don't believe that, and if you think that there's a problem, as former Governor Hickel told me one time, you simply discipline them. That's what they're for. And they have, in Missouri, where I am licensed for 23 years, a state which has reciprocity with Missouri, where I'm not allowed to get reciprocity here because of Bar Rule 2.2B3 for having failed a bar exam in the last 5 years, I will point out that Missouri has a very big disciplinary group that handles all of its matters. It handles COE in a different way, too. I have no objection to increasing the COE in Alaska. I think they do a pretty decent job here, to be honest with you, although it's a small group. Many people take many more than 3 hours. But in Missouri, I am a Category 1 attorney. I take 15 hours minimum plus 2 hours ethics every year, and I consider that almost a non-issue in House Bill 63. What is really important is the passage rate, and I think that there is an obligation to the public to increase the passage rate. I mean, having 60-65% is wrong. In 2011, and you talk about statistics and you want reports on COE, the National Conference of Bar Examiners, located in Chicago, keeps these statistics year after year. We've always been the lowest in the nation in Alaska. And even in 2011, the passage rate was 74% nationwide, including the U.S. territories and states which have unaccredited law schools, while Alaska was 59%. Now, you ask me if there isn't control going on in the Bar Association to limit entry. And I think this is so serious that House Bill 63 should not be passed. You should let it sunset, give them a year during the sunset period to get together and figure out what they're going to do about their bar exam. Now, if they can manipulate the exam, the passage rate through the essays and other ways, but basically there has to be an effort so that other states which pass 80-90% on a regular basis, and that's true, you can look on the statistics, they recognize that these people deserve a right to practice. You really learn to practice law by doing it. And I have a great deal of respect for everybody in the organization that is attempting to do something in law, but the public is not being better served by having fewer licensed attorneys in Alaska, believe me. And these people will always look to get assistance or mentoring if they feel they need it. If they're starting out new, very few hang their own shingle these days. I don't see where it's such a big deal to increase the passage rate. I'm doing this for the people, by the way, that are following me. And for your information, I am sitting for my umpteenth bar exam tomorrow through Thursday, a three-day exam. And unlike Ms. Deborah O'Regan, I am here. I'm taking the time because I consider it a very serious and important matter for this state. I have worked for the state legislature for 6.5 years prior to this January, and I have a great deal of respect for what you do, but I don't think this should be just another rubber stamp of a passage of a sunset date. Thanks very much. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at the language on the second page, the last sentence in the second-to-last paragraph, Wisconsin, which you cite, Mr. Obermeyer, licenses 100% of all graduates of its state law schools at the time the law school graduate. That's called a diploma privilege, and the University of Montana, I believe, has a similar diploma privilege. A young friend of mine was unable to pass the bar in another state. He happens to live in Washington, D.C., which has reciprocity all over the country. And he looked, and the state that licenses more attorneys, the highest passage rate for licensing in the country, is Wisconsin. I don't think that is indicative of how most states operate. They just have, and so he took the Wisconsin bar and passed it, and then he got licensed in D.C., so it all turned out. I don't think Wisconsin is a great example there.
Any other questions?
Can I respond?
Briefly, please.
Well, I just want to point out, please look at the National Conference of Bar Examiners. They maintain some great records, and they do have committees for all of these purposes. And if you feel that this requires a little look-see, please do so. You'll see that the passage rates are generally much higher across the nation. And there's no reason why a state like Alaska, which is the only state without a law school, all of the territories have law schools. There's no advocacy for an applicant in this state. You're isolated, you're limited, you're excluded, and gee, one-third is supposed to take the exam over paying more fees to the Bar Association. I just think the thing is nonsense, and you're doing a tremendous disservice to both the applicants and the public. Thank you.
One more question.
Representative Greenberg has another question.
It's a question really for Ms. Siebold and Mr. Van Gore, if I may. I'm sorry, I forgot to ask.
Are you done with your questions?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Which one, Steve or Hannah?
Either one. I don't know who can answer this.
Okay.
The question is, as I understand it, there is now a new either exam or an agreement among some 21 states that there's an exam you take and then you can get licensed in any or all of the states. I'm not sure of the details of that. Do either of you know what I'm talking about?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Grunberg. What you're talking about is what's called the Uniform Bar Exam. It is basically an assortment of different exams, the multi-state professional responsibility exam, the multi-state bar exam, research question, and so forth. And what the National Conference of Bar Examiners is proposing is that bar admission scores be portable, so that individuals who graduate from a law school and pass a uniform bar in one state can transfer that score to another state. One of the justices of the court has a great deal of interest in it, and we are studying that issue at the present time.
Well, through the chair. That's great. I really hope we can do that because it's going to help a lot of people, I think.
May I make a statement regarding that, please?
No, I'm sorry, Tom. Go ahead. We'll do that.
I really won't take long to dwell on that. But
for the record, this is Tom Obermeyer speaking.
This is Tom Obermeyer again. For the uniform bar exam, which is being used partially in some states, is not uniform. It is also not totally objective. The United States medical licensing exam is now 100% objective. It took 9 years to get all the states to agree. There's no one standard of minimal competency in any of these exams throughout the nation in law. And that's one of the problems here. Until you get to that, the concept of a uniform bar exam is meaningless because all states will continue to control the passage rates. That's all I have to say on that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. What I'm going to do now is close public testimony because there's nobody else online, nobody in the room. But I guess I would just comment that we're looking at a sunset date change here and not a policy, bill. And so that's just my own feeling on it. But is there any other comments or input here from the...
Okay, with that, thank you, everybody, for testifying. Mr. Chair, I would move HB 6328.
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Did I move the wrong bill? Maybe it's a better bill. We're going to try to move here. Bring one of my bills in.
That's what I get for changing the order here.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill number 63-28-LS0309-A with individual recommendations. And zero fiscal note.
Okay, so seeing no objection, our bill moves. The paperwork will come around, but we're going to go press right on in light of time because we're going to wind up at 3 o'clock no matter what. So, yes, if you would come up, Tammy, Representative Wilson, and we'll look at HB. That would get the right one here now, 34.
I should have slipped one of my balls in. Out the door.
What is it, 34?
If you would identify yourself for the record and proceed with telling us what HB 34 is about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2. What you will see, though, is a committee substitute in front of you, and if you could move that in front of you, I would be more than happy to explain the difference.
Thank you for reminding me. Vice Chair Lynn, do you have a CS there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move committee substitute for House Bill number 34. 28-LS-0195-N, is that correct?
No, C.
Would be C, correct. Make that backslash C.
Yeah, and seeing no objection, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and give the record, my name is Tammy Wilson, District 2. What this bill does is that it says that any time that we take federal money, the state of Alaska, the original one asked for the federal government to tell us how we'd be able to meet the new guidelines that they have set and how much it would cost, not just the state of Alaska, but the communities affected. I still truly believe that's the way it should be, but somehow legal has convinced me that that is illegal, and we can't do that. So what you see in front of you is that we would still ask the federal government to be able to show us the economics on any type of new federal program, how it would affect us economically as a state, as well as down to a community. If they do not do it, then it would be up to the state agency most impacted to be able to do that. I am in hopes that we already do that, but I have not seen anything at this point. And so I have a few examples for you. For instance, most of you know that I talk a lot about what's called PM 2.5, is a small particulate. The federal government used to have it at 65 micrograms cubic meters and lowered in 2006 to 35 micrograms per cubic meter. With that came no plan, no way of how the Fairbanks North Shore Borough would be able to achieve that. Yet we've been spending millions of dollars a year dealing with wood stoves, coal stoves, oil, all sorts of things, trying to figure out exactly what it would be to meet that. And what this bill would do is that it would say that we would have to be able to economically show such a plan like this, what it would take to achieve it, and how much economic impact it would have. But also on the other side, on exchange, is the transportation funding that the federal government says that the Fairbanks North Star Borough would do. As any good business, we would want to know both sides of the story, and that's what we're asking for. A couple other examples, Alaska Railroad has just had an unfunded mandate that has to do with positive train control. You will actually see this as a capital project for $35 million, and that doesn't even complete the project. Without that, there's a good chance that we could lose our passenger trains. And what would that do to our economics? And again, you know, it's for one situation that happened, and they take it, and they're forcing all of us. A new one I learned as I had this is airport de-icing. Now, in Fairbanks and Anchorage, we are now going to have to change the chemicals that we use. It's cost nationally $90 million to the states to do this. It's based on how many takeoffs and landing that there are. I'm not sure what else went into it. The rural area has also been hit with what's called PM10, dust control, where we've actually had to buy trucks, water trucks, to keep watering down the roads. I don't know how often they would have to do that, but I can't imagine, you know, how much that possibly cost. And then one of the big ones is Medicaid or Obamacare, either one. Even with Medicaid at this point, we're looking at 10% of expanded Medicaid by 2020 in which the state. This is just a handful of items that you can find. I am sure that you can spend all day with more and more mandates. What this bill does, though, it says that we, the legislature, want to know what the impacts are going to be, and we want to report. We're not saying that we won't do the mandate. We're not saying anything except we, those who appropriate the funds, want to know before those decisions are made so that if we still have further funding that may be needed down the road, that we're looking at that. As you will see, there is a fiscal note based on the original one. It is an indeterminate, and that is on the original portion of it. And what I find interesting about it is indeterminate because they don't know how much money, you know, first of all, because we can't tell the federal government what to do, even though we keep trying. But what it does tell us is that there is a lot of impact on both sides. and we should know what those are. So this will be updated, Mr. Chair, as now they have the committee substitute that says, no, the federal government doesn't have to do it, although we would request it first, and then the state would do it. I would be very interested to hear whether or not the state currently does it. We have been told on some things they do, it depends upon how important it is. Well, I believe every time we take any money from the federal government, we should know what strings are attached, and not just how it's going to affect us, the state, which we're very good about doing, but how it's going to affect the communities that we all live in. And with that, I'll take any questions you may have, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? I have one. If you would look, tell me where, there it is, the report. I'm sorry, I found it just as I was saying that. I was scanning it two or three times. I was looking for where the requirement is for the report, and that's down on page 2, line 6 and 7. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So I was just wondering the mechanics. We're not in session often, so who would this go to? What are you envisioning? I mean, to the speaker and...
Right. Mr. Chair, the way I see it is that they would ask for the federal government to do it. They didn't. The state would do it. And then it would just be transmitted as any other report would be done as it is complete. So just as you see regulations throughout the year, even though we're not here, you would also see the impact on these. Because it's not even the legislature that will make the decision whether or not to take the funds. All we're requesting is to have our eyes wide open before the administration decides to do it.
Well, another question is, do you expect a continued indeterminate fiscal note or on your bill? Have you talked to them at all? What's coming on that?
Mr. Chair, no, I honestly think it should be zero. I am in hopes that we already do that as a matter of good business practice, that before we do any portion of that the agencies are taking close looks and they do know what the impact is. You know, why they don't tell us is a big question on that, and maybe what they think is a small amount of strings being attached or a large part. The other is whether or not that they look at it on the community level, and as you know, sometimes I think we're a little laxed on that. Most of our fiscal notes show how it's going to impact the state of Alaska, but it doesn't say how it's going to impact the communities, and for that, it could be a lot larger, especially as we see federal dollars go down as well as state dollars go down. Some of these mandates may actually end up right at the foot of our communities, some of those that can't afford to do it.
So just to make sure I understand, and we'll go to Representative Ledoux, you had a question, but as I understand the way this is written, and it just all it is telling our administrative branch they cannot implement a federal mandate that until they've done a fiscal impact statement. And so that is the crux of the what the law is actually doing here, and the rest is spinoff.
But yes, Mr. Close?
Yeah, okay. Did you have a question, Representative Ledoux?
No, I think I'm not sure I've got the correct CS.
It should be 28- through the chair, Representative Ledoux, 20-LSO195/C.
Nope, I'm missing that.
Nope. Yeah, I was on aim at first too.
Let's put it a little easier until we get the right one.
Let's do your
yes. We have clarified that with the mistake we thought was there, it really wasn't. We have C in front of us now, and everything is set. So, proceed. Any other questions? I will ask, who in the administration is there to talk about this, as far as the impact on them, this mandate?
Well, Mr. Chair, we were told OMB would be online, maybe with the deferral because of earlier, but I have no problem with coming back with a new fiscal note and making sure that there will be somebody here or online to be able to speak about the fiscal impact.
Super. We have one person to testify on the bill, and I'd like to hear what he has to say because he took time out of his busy day to call in, and then we'll set this bill aside until we see the fiscal impact and hear the response of the administration. So, okay. Mike Coons, are you online?
Yes, sir.
Mike, welcome. Thanks for calling in, taking time out of your day. What do you have for us?
I did a prepared statement, which I sent an email to you about, as well as Representative Wilson. but now with this CES, this kind of throws a little bit of a kink in it. So I want to basically say what I was going to say, although I do want to revise the first part of it. My name is Mike Sims. I'm from Palmer, Alaska, and speaking for myself. I support the intent of HB 34. However, it doesn't go far enough. In the original bill, I suggest adding language to section 0110.20, line 7, replace this where it says the state may not comply with to the state will comply with. This new change on that section, I would like to see it where it says executive orders shall request from the appropriate branch or agency to demand. I don't understand why states can't demand from the federal government when they demand from us all the time. Let me finish up with what I was going to say. Paragraphs 1 and 2 on the original one, I would have liked to have added a couple others. One being that the constitutional article and how this is in full accordance with the Articles of the Constitution and the 10th Amendment. And then another one would have been the laws will be funded by the federal government and will not impose costs to the state or impose an unfunded mandate to the state or its people. We've had unfunded mandates for too doggone long, and we're getting inundated with that, and it's costing us a bundle of money for really no good reason. In closing, House Bill 34, along with House Bill 83, I think these two go together really well, will go a long way towards regaining our rights as states, ensuring that all law coming from the Congress, as well as any rules, regulations, executive orders, secretarial orders, etc., are constitutional and will not violate our rights under the 10th Amendment. The Congress and President must, in the strongest language possible, know that the 10th Amendment, which reads, the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, or reserved to the states respectfully or to the people, means just what it says, and that the state of Alaska will not continue to be rolled over by a central federal government that has no regard for the state or its people. I urge passage of House Bill 34 to this committee and passage on the floor of the House, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your succinct testimony, Mike. One of the questions I'll be having for the department is how many regs they anticipate to be fall into this category, and I'm sure the sponsor probably is interested in that too. But Representative Wilson?
Mr. Chair, again, my name is Tammy Wilson, District 2, and I just wanted to address this. Mr. Kuhn says he did do that. We would have loved to do exactly what he said, but as you'll see, there's a constitutionality issue under the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution. That's what we were told why we could not. We do not have the right.
To reach assistance, press 0. To enter the internet session, press 1. For media admittance options, press 4. To mute your phone, press 5. For recordings, press 6. For Q&A options, press 7. For advanced features, press 8. To exit the meeting and return to the main menu, press 9. To rejoin the meeting, press star.
Identify yourself as a record, please.
Okay, I'll try that one more time with that. But
to reach assistance, press 0. To enter the internet session, press 1. For media admittance options, press 4. To mute your phone, press 5. For recording, press 6.
And the teleconference problem, so we aren't going all across the state, but we're being officially recorded, we're back on the record, and so we can continue to do business. Were you in the middle of responding, Representative Wilson? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record, Representative Wilson.
We're being recorded.
And I just wanted to let, we do hear what he says of wanting the federal government to do it. We were told that that was unconstitutional because of supremacy law, so this was a way for us to be able to, hopefully, we'll still ask the federal government for the information. This just makes it so if we don't get it, we do get it from the state. The whole point is that we want to see the effects, and if we have to get it from the state, it's better than, in my opinion right now, where we're getting it from neither one. And I will make sure at our next hearing we do have somebody from the administration to explain the new fiscal note.
Thank you. Any other Comments? Okay, we're going to put this bill aside, and we'll look forward to that and continued discussion, Representative Greenberg.
I hope that we'll deal with the general issue of unfunded mandates, because there's a federal law on the subject, but none of the departments follow it. And I don't know the status of it, and I'm happy to talk with your staff on it, but this is a real serious problem.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. I agree. Okay, so with that, we'll gavel out at 5 minutes to three.
Good meeting.
When you got a head cold, you can't really get too deep.